Right now, I'm happy to welcome back to our program former FCC Commissioner Michael Copps, who served on the commission from 2001 to 2011. He's now a special advisor to the group Common Cause and their Media and Democracy Reform Initiative. Thank you so much for joining us, Commissioner Copps.
Hey, thank you for having me back on the program. I am delighted to be with you.
Well, as opposed to other times you've joined us, we have a bit of good news to celebrate here on this program. As many of our listeners may be aware, and certainly I'm happy to tell them if they're not, FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler recently announced his embracing of net neutrality, which is certainly a victory for hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of activists around the country who have long advocated that the FCC regulate Internet service providers under something called Title II of the Communications Act of 1934, much like the longtime regulation of landline phone service and other public utilities. As we begin here, Commissioner Copps, I wondered if you would speak to what FCC Chair Tom Wheeler is calling for in these new regulations and the significance in this policy change.
Well, you are correct in saying that we seem to be on the cusp of a victory here, much closer than when last we spoke. I always caution, though, that it's not over until it's over. I never underestimate the power of the special interests and their ability to bring legions of lobbyists and wheelbarrows of money to Washington, D.C. You'll notice that their ads haven't diminished in recent weeks against what the FCC is doing. So we have about 17 days to go, I think, until the vote, and we need to be vigilant then. But what's at issue here is the future of the central communications infrastructure of our time, communications and the broadband internet. This is increasingly the infrastructure we use to find jobs, to do our jobs, to educate ourselves, take care of our health, and do a whole host of other things. And we were on the danger without any open internet rules or net neutrality, as some would call them. Well, that's kind of an anodyne expression, but open internet or internet freedom rules to make sure that this broadband network isn't controlled by a handful of gatekeepers and special interests who can control access into our house, who can favor their friends, their own affiliates and their business friends, and speed up their ability to get into our homes over our internet fibers and so forth, and slow down people who they might not want to have that kind of access. An absence of rules like that is not just an economic threat and a commercial threat, but it's a threat to our democracy, too, as we have talked before. And at stake is our ability to communicate, our news, our information, and our civic dialogue and all the rest. So what we're trying to make sure now, again, is that a few people cannot be in charge of this public good that is the internet.
Thank you for that, Commissioner Copps. Why is it that you think FCC Chair Tom Wheeler changed his mind? Certainly, we had President Obama speak out on the issue recently after 6 years in office.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering why it is you think it took 6 years for President Obama to really publicly embrace net neutrality, which certainly was the catalyst, if not directly the pressure that was required to get his appointee, FCC Chair Tom Wheeler, to really change his tune and embrace net neutrality.
Well, I wish we had done this sooner, back when the FCC passed its first version of net neutrality rules back in 2010. I was still on the commission. They were kind of very weak porridge. They were not soundly based legally, and they were substantively inadequate. Those rules were subsequently thrown out. But had the administration maybe been on the record more at that particular time, trying to encourage the then chairman of the FCC, Chairman Jenikowski, to go with Title II, maybe that would have been helpful, and we could have gotten to this back in 2010 rather than now. The president has talked for a long time about net neutrality, but never defined it with the precision that was required, and never got to Title II network neutrality and really strong rules. So, you know, Comcast and AT&T and Verizon talk about net neutrality too. They're trying to gut it, but they try to give the appearance, oh, we're for net neutrality, we're for net neutrality. We just don't want any rules behind it. So it would have been good. Now, why did the chairman come now? I think a number of reasons. I think there was a tremendous public outpouring of sentiment to the FCC. Over 4 million people contacted the FCC in the last year, urging Title II strong network neutrality rules. I think that was a powerful force. The president's statement, I think, helped. But I think the chairman did make an intensive effort, and you'd have to talk to him about his own motivations, and he did have another plan originally, but I think he did try to listen to all sides of the debate here, and I think he finally came around to the realization that the way that he was thinking about originally to found these rules in another part of the telecommunications law where it wouldn't be very efficacious was wrong, and the only way to get to real net neutrality was through Title II. So I think we have to credit him with digging in, but I think these pushes from the American people and from the president and so forth also helped. So it was a combination of circumstances, but it was a good combination of circumstances.
We're speaking with former FCC Commissioner Michael Copps, who served on the commission from 2001 to 2011. He's now a special advisor to Common Cause in their Media and Democracy Reform Initiative. Commissioner Copps, as someone who served on the FCC, you understand better than most the pressure that's brought to bear on the decisions made at the level of the FCC by these large telecommunications companies, these cable companies, and internet service providers. Give our listeners a bit of a feel for the kind of pressure commissioners like yourself come under in terms of making rules and regulations that benefit the consumer.
Well, I think the big companies obviously have a leg up and an advantage over the average citizen when it comes to trying to influence the decisions of the Federal Communications Commission. They have the lobbyists, they have the money, they have the firms representing them in addition to their own lobbying shops, and they roam the halls of the FCC every month, every week, every day. So if, as a commissioner, you confine yourselves to that discussion and talking to them and only occasionally to other commissioners, then you are creating a world of problems for the American people. So I don't mind, and in fact I encourage conversations with business, the ones that run these communications networks, and you have to have their perspective, but you have to always remember that your charge is to represent the public interest. Your charge is to bring the most advanced and affordable and ubiquitous communications networks to the American people as is feasible, and that's been the law since 1934. So you have to get out of Washington, D.C. You have to get out of that building in Southwest Washington and go out to communities that actually live with the consequences of the decisions that you make at the FCC. And that's really what I tried to do the whole time I was there on the issues of media consolidation, media ownership, the problems faced by diversity, minority communities, and getting a communications network that really tees up their problems, and now certainly with this issue of the future of the open internet. So if you take the FCC out into the hinterland, you learn a lot. I never went to a public hearing where I didn't learn something that I didn't know beforehand, and you let the American people see what the FCC is, what decisions it is pondering and deciding, and you develop a conversation about the importance of this of these issues. I think media has done a somewhat better job on this issue of net neutrality, by no means perfect, but better on this than they did on media ownership. by which I mean a few companies gobbling up radio and TV stations all over the country with consequent damage to localism and local communities and diversity and all that. So I think that helps. But most important of all, I think, is really talking to the American people about this and making sure you're hearing from diversity groups, from people with disabilities, from people in the inner city and rural America, and if you crank that in with the representations of the business community, then you can come out with an intelligent decision. But it's a time, as you and I both know, when not just the FCC, but government in general is so swayed by the power of money and by the power of special interests. Long ago, I used to teach American history before I came to Washington, D.C. I think you'd have to go back to that first notorious Gilded Age of the 1880s and 1890s to find a period in our history when we were as disadvantaged by the power of special interests and the power of big money right now. And that makes us victory, if indeed it comes to happen, all the more impressive. And it really does show us that in the end, if people can find out about an issue and have the opportunity to express an issue, they can overpower even the power of big money in our society. It doesn't happen all the time. It doesn't happen often, but it can happen, and that ought to give us some encouragement in our democratic system and some encouragement to clean it up and make it work better. But if we are united as a people and reform comes from the bottom up, we can solve a lot of problems that this nation faces.
Commissioner Copps, as you said, the grassroots movement pushing for debt neutrality was successful in the end. Well, at least we hope so. As you said, the fight is not over yet.
Yes, sir.
But maybe you could speak to that whole issue of grassroots power, because there are many people in this country who are quite cynical, and unfortunately many people believe our system is broken, both political and economic, yeah, and is now the purview and the playing ground of these large, these giant corporations who can spread money around and get their way in Washington.
Right. If
you were to lay out sort of the things that this movement did right, what specifically are the strategies and tactics that you think worked to the advantage of these activists in pushing for net neutrality?
Well, number one, we had a good and just and apparently obvious, well, maybe obvious is too strong a word, but a just cause that people could understand. And I think that came along at a time in our country's history when people are becoming more and more aware of the power of special interests and big money and the need to do something about that. And then all of a sudden they read about, well, the court has thrown out the few even weak internet freedom rules that we had. There are no rules now, so a company can gatekeep, a company can block, a company can throttle a service of sites that they might not want to carry. And that came across about the same time, that issue, as we heard about Comcast and Time Warner Cable wanting to merge into this supernova kind of giant mega Comcast, I call it, and I think that captured the attention of the people. I think the public interest groups in Washington were able to see this developing and to harness it. I think the internet itself played a powerful role in helping the FCC get the message that all these millions of Americans were out there. And then, as you mentioned before, the president chiming in, I think, helped too. But I think this came not from the top, but I think this came from the bottoms up. And I think it's sort of like all great reform movements in our country, as civil rights or disability rights or worker rights, or you can go right on down the list. Those things that really make a difference get their nourishment, get their strength from the grassroots. And I think, you know, you ask, why did the president wait for as long as he did? Well, maybe it took that long for them to realize that really this was a mass movement in this constituency that he had depended upon of young people on the internet was really getting worried about the future and expected him to cross some T's and dot some I's on the commitment that he had made to network neutrality and make sure we came out with a strong package of net neutrality protections, such as those that Tom Wheeler is propounding for February 26. Now, your viewers should know that nobody has yet seen the entire text of the probably couple hundred or a few hundred page item that will be voted on. He just circulated it last week to his fellow commissioners. They hadn't seen it either. So we'll have to see how all of those T's are crossed and I's are dotted. But all the signals look good. Everything we've heard looks good. What Wheeler has been saying since then and the fact sheets that the commission has put out look good. So I think we'll get, I hope, 90% plus of what just about anybody could hope for.
Yeah, I just wanted to sort of continue on the line you were discussing there earlier about grassroots activism and information that was flowing to people about this issue. It was interesting, and you could get your take on this, that it took, a comedy show, John Oliver's This Week, yesterday, whatever the name of his new show is, where he, very cleverly and in an entertaining way, sort of dissected net neutrality and what it means to the average person.
Yeah.
He cut through a lot of stuff that many of us have been unable to do in terms of conveying the importance of this issue. But that was one key point, I think, that got a lot of people on board, right?
It absolutely was, and there were people. You could go up to Capitol Hill after that, and Capitol Hill staffers and even some members who we'd been talking to were suddenly much more aware of the issue, and that show really cut through to the essence of it. And, you know, this is an issue where you can get lost in the tall weeds pretty quickly. It can get fairly technical, and sometimes it takes somebody with a little different perspective, like John Oliver had, who can cut through those weeds, cut them down, and let people see what's at stake. So that was an important contribution that shone a lot of light on the issue.
Commissioner Copps, I wanted to ask you about your concern about the new rules. The new FCC rules will be made public soon. What is essential, you think, for these rules to encompass in terms of net neutrality and the kinds of enforcement mechanisms that will be necessary for it to be effective and useful?
Right. Well, first of all, I think you need to make sure that there is no blocking, that broadband providers are not allowed to block access to legal content or applications or services or devices to the Internet, that there's no throttling of sites, broadband providers not being able to impair or degrade lawful traffic on the Internet on the basis of content or applications or whatever, no paid prioritization so that a broadband provider cannot favor some Internet traffic over others. In essence, fast lanes for the 1% and slow lanes for the 99%. So non-discrimination, greater transparency. And I think it's important, too, that there be some flexibility in all of this. I don't think this particular item has to write every little provision of every public interest obligation going forward. Broadband evolves, the Internet evolves, and this should be a relatively light-handed a regulation that encourages the innovation on the Internet, encourages entrepreneurship and all of that. So the important thing here is that the FCC is claiming or reclaiming its jurisdiction over advanced telecommunications. I was there on that dark day in 2002 when the commission first voted and said that cable modem was really an information service, and they yanked it out of Title II, where all the consumer protections and universal service and privacy protections and public safety and all that stuff was, and put it in another part of the law where it couldn't possibly be upheld and where there were no obligations. So that was maybe the worst vote that I witnessed the whole time. I saw some pretty bad ones, but it was maybe the worst one that I saw in the 11 years that I was there. But on February 26th, we might see the best one in really decades. So asserting this authority and making sure that somebody is responsible for making sure that as the Internet develops, that we don't have gatekeepers, we don't have toll booths, we don't have monopolies, and to give that that authority the tools that it needs, and then all work together, business included, to craft rules of the road that will work, that will not stifle innovation, and that will bring the benefits of broadband to every American. And, you know, we're not doing so well in, when it comes to the spread of broadband across the United States of America. Back when I first went to the commission, we were probably number one or two in the country, now in the world, I mean. Now, fast forward 2015, the OECD says we're 15 or 16, depending on the metrics you use. We're 25th in this, 30th in that. I even saw one the other day that said we were 55 and something. Our consumers are paying too much for slow broadband, and non-ubiquitous broadband is really harming our ability for our citizens to be competitive as individuals in our country, to be competitive as a nation.
Well, thanks for that recap there. We're speaking with former FCC Commissioner Michael Copps about net neutrality and the rules that will be announced later this month from FCC Chair Tom Wheeler. As you know, Commissioner Copps and many of our listeners are quite aware, in the wake of the announcement that net neutrality rules will be issued by the FCC, there's been the threat of lawsuits launched by cable companies and phone corporations, and there's certainly the likelihood of an army of lobbyists descending on Capitol Hill to push legislation in the new Republican-controlled Congress that would certainly weaken FCC rules on net neutrality. What do you expect as the response from these giant telecommunications companies?
I expect a full court press against the new rules. I would add, though, that no matter what the FCC decided, unless it was complete capitulation to the special interests, no matter what they did in the wake of either strong or less stringent regulations, tepid regulations, it goes to court automatically. Just about everything that the FCC does that's of any importance at all ends up in court. So the important thing here is to make sure that when you go to court, that the case you take to court is really solidly grounded on good legal footing. And that's what Title II is. That's the only place in the Telecommunications Act that's going to allow the commission to do these things. That's where the previous commissions refused to put these laws, and that's why they were thrown out in the first place, the weaker first edition. So nothing is guaranteed, and with the present Supreme Court we have, who knows how it's going to come out, and all we have to do is look at any issue of importance, and we see one court going one way and another court another way. So there's no guarantee how this will turn out, but again, go in with your best case that you can possibly make. We're doing that. Go in with a case where public opinion is clear, that you have millions of Americans already on record on this, and there'll be millions of more probably, and where the president has weighed in and has folks behind him too. So I think this is the best way to go, not the assured way, but the best way, the best chance we have. And if perchance we don't get these rules, we're going to have done really dire damage to our communications infrastructure, to the news and information that we get, to our democratic discourse. And there's really, you know, there's really, when you come right down to it, in my mind, there are a few issues that rise to this level of importance because we depend upon our communications infrastructure for our democratic dialogue, now for teeing up our issues. And if it's not doing its job, and if we don't have the ability to encourage it to do its job, then it's going to disappear, and when it disappears, democracy is in great danger.
Well, just lastly, Commissioner Copps, in this next stage of the fight for net neutrality rules, how important is grassroots activism when the courts and the and Congress weigh in on this?
It's going to be vitally, critically important when it comes to the Congress, because you know, this is a partisan issue in Congress. You can go around the United States of America, and I've done this, believe me, And this is not a red state or a blue state issue. There's not one party that that favors a few people controlling access to the internet. Americans want an open internet, and there have been polls recently that show it's 80% of Republicans and 80% of Democrats are specifically in favor of no fast lanes on the internet. It's probably more than that, but you know that's pretty high rating for the polls. But the Congress is going to go ahead. What will slow Congress down is the understanding that at the grassroots, people do care. What will slow Congress down is when that senator or congressman comes home and has a town hall meeting and somebody raises his or her hand and says, hey, where are you on this internet freedom and where are you on network neutrality? And if you're going the other way or you want to get rid of these rules, why are you doing that? What's your rationale for doing that? That makes a huge difference. I saw that when we did the media ownership thing back 10 or 12 years ago, and I had members of Congress tell me, you know, I never heard about this issue until a couple of months ago, and I went home and somebody raised a hand and asked me about media ownership, and I saw it at the next meeting too. That congressman came back and voted to overturn Michael Powell's rules that we're loosening the media ownership rules. So grassroots pressure can make a difference. And if there are those in Congress who are really going to push this, and I hope they're having second thoughts right now when they begin to see the reaction to this, but that's when grassroots is going to become critically important.
Thank you so much for your time and all your work in the FCC. And since you left, I appreciate you know, all your advocacy on behalf of the average person in this country. Thanks so much, Michael
Well,
Cox.
Well, thank you, and thank you for teeing this issue up. You made a real public service contribution by paying the attention and that you have to the issue.
And I'll just recommend our listeners go to Fair Press, as one of the advocacy groups hot on this issue for many years, as well as Common Cause, where you work as well, and that's commoncause.org. I think you can find their media and democracy reform initiative that you work with on that website and get a lot
Absolutely.
More details. All right. FCC Commissioner Michael Copps, thanks so much for making time for us.
Thank you, Scott.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care. Bye-bye. That's Michael Copps. Really glad we got to talk to him about this important net neutrality issue we've been covering for many, many years here, and some ground made up here. Some victory is in sight, we all hope.